Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Green rivers, or to be more specific, blue-green rivers, or to be even more specific, mats of blue-green algae choking the flowages and reservoirs of the Wisconsin River. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we're going to look at an ambitious plan to remove phosphorus from the 9,000-square-mile Wisconsin River watershed. An area that encompasses 21 counties, 85 cities and villages, and 108 wastewater treatment facilities. The plan by the DNR is aimed at cutting the blue-green algae blooms that impact Lake Peatonwell, the Castle Rock flowage, the Big Eau Plaine Reservoir, and other parts of the Wisconsin River system every summer. Joining us by phone to discuss the proposal is DNR Water Resource Engineer Kevin Kirsch, who worked on the 2009 study that led to it and who is now working to implement its recommendations. Now, here in our studio, UW Extension Ag Agent for Portage County, Ken Schrader, will be talking about how the plan will impact the many farmers in the watershed. And also Rick Georgeson, a Lake Peatonwell homeowner and leader of the Citizens Environmental Group known as PACKERS, which stands for Peatonwell and Castle Rock Stewards. We'd like you to join the conversation. If you got questions about how the plan will affect farmers or regional municipalities, or you've got observations about the water quality issues that it seeks to address, here's the number, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or if you'd like, you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Let me correct that, our webpage, wpr.org/route51. That webpage address again is wpr.org/route51. Well, gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate you all being here. And Kevin Kirsch, why don't we start with you? Why exactly is the DNR taking action to limit phosphorus?
So, Glenn, as you mentioned in your intro, we've initiated this project for the Wisconsin River Basin. It's required under the Clean Water Act. Under the Clean Water Act, we're required to develop these restoration plans, so-called TMDLs, total maximum daily loads, to address water quality impairments. And within the Wisconsin River Basin, we have 110 stream and river segments and about 38 lakes and reservoirs that are currently not meeting our water quality criteria. And our water quality criteria can kind of be broken out into two components, our water quality standards and then the supporting criteria. And the water quality standards are designed to protect fish aquatic life, human health, and recreation in our water bodies. And supporting that, we have water quality criteria such as numeric standards for phosphorus. So in this case, the water bodies I mentioned that were impaired in the Wisconsin River Basin are impaired due to excessive algal blooms caused by phosphorus.
Okay, and define for us, if you could, this concept, the TMDL, the total maximum daily load of phosphorus that individual bodies of water can take before they're impaired.
Yeah, so the concept of the TMDL stems all the way back to the initial Clean Water Act. And so it's somewhat of a misnomer because it uses the phrase total maximum daily load. So we're required to put a daily component in basically an equation to calculate how much phosphorus that water body can assimilate on a daily basis. However, we don't necessarily implement on a daily basis. So if any of your listeners go online and see the report, they will see that we actually have done the analysis on an annual basis to match the phosphorus cycles and seasonal cycles of the basin.
So since you mentioned it, where can our listeners see that report?
So if they go to the Wisconsin DNR website, and the best way to get to it is to just type in Wisconsin River Basin TMDL on our main search engine, it'll take you right to the website. And on the website, you can find a copy of the report and previous presentations that have been done.
All right, so that's the DNR website and Wisconsin River Basin TMDL. If you type that in, that new study, that new report of yours will come up. You've been working on this for almost 10 years. Is that correct?
Correct. So Wisconsin has been addressing phosphorus for quite a while. So we have something called technology-based limits that wastewater treatment plants have been implementing for decades to reduce the amount of phosphorus they've been discharging. And we also have non-point performance standards. But those are both more meant as kind of a statewide standard. What the TMDL does is really look at the specific water bodies within a basin and get down to what those specific water bodies need. And as you mentioned, this project's been going on for about 10 years. There were some earlier efforts to get funding to initiate some projects, but it was really got going in 2008 when one of your other guests, Rick, and others with Packers had what they called pontoons in politics, where they took legislators out onto the reservoirs to see the impact that the phosphorus was having with the excessive algal blooms. And then in 2009, the state legislature appropriated funds to begin the study. And the first phases of the study were collecting monitoring data to help support the development of the model and to really get around and define what the specific issues are. And the study progressed all the way up to this last year where it was completed, and we're now rolling out the draft report and findings.
So the study came out to, about $2.8 million to work on this?
Correct. So there was about $2.8 million, a combination of state funding and federal funding. EPA provided funds to also help with the study. So it was quite an ambitious effort, and that money is all that money was spent all on the development phase of this project. So we've set now the goals that are needed to meet the water quality standards. The next phase is the implementation phase.
And Rick Georgeson, let's talk about pontoons in politics, since Kevin Kirsch brought it up. As he said, you've been lobbying for this study since 2007. Must feel good to see it completed.
Well, it certainly does. It's really a high point where we've reached a threshold that we've been hoping to get to for the last 8 years.
And talk about that specific day, the pontoon in politics, when you took those state lawmakers out to see those ugly blue-green mats of algae that were floating on Lake Peatonwell. What was their reaction?
Well, the day was just perfect in that the blue-green algae was alive and well, and we had seven legislators arrive to the event, and we talked about Lake Peatonwell and how it's appreciated by so many people around the state and how it's used. And we took them out on the pontoons, and they said, we've got this issue. I says, right about now, every summer it gets really bad, and people just, they have to go back home. They leave their vacations because it's just bad. So we'd just like to bring some attention to this issue and see what can be done.
And they took action.
And a year later, we got information that $1 million was put into the state budget to go ahead and conduct a water quality study called a TMDL. So that was in 2008. And here we are.
And here
it's coming to an end.
Here we are, 10 years later. Ken Schrader, your reaction to the completion of the DNR study and the call for phosphorus reduction.
Well, it helps everyone have a better understanding of where things are coming from and where they're going. And with that information in hand, gives the ag industry and municipalities an opportunity to kind of concentrate the efforts where they need to be.
We're going to set up the rest of our conversation this morning with a feature story that I produced for Wisconsin Public Radio on the subject. It involves two of our guests today, Ken Schrader and Rick Georgeson.
In August of 2016, Rick Georgeson was livid about the blue-green algae in front of his home on Lake Peatonwell, a flowage on the Wisconsin River.
Light green, dark green, it's sticking to the rocks, it's floating in mats out on the lake. It smells like raw sewage. It stinks.
Blue-green algae is a kind of bacteria that grows on surface water because of hot weather and phosphorus pollution. It can cause serious sickness if ingested. That summer, it killed a dog that swam in a nearby lake.
Justin was banging It's a bunch of walleye.
1 year later, it's a different scene. Families are fishing in the harbor, and Rick Georgeson is sitting in a pontoon boat, smiling.
The water has been about the best it's been in many, many years. It's been a cool summer.
But while the algae isn't as bad this year, it's still a chronic problem for Petenwell and the Castle Rock flowage to the south. Georgeson guides the pontoon into the open water. 2 miles down the coast, there it is, a bright green ooze on the surface. He says in hot summers, the algae can drive tourists away.
We've seen people come to the beach and open the car door. The kids get out and run down to see the water. They get back in and leave. It's just sad.
Georgeson is the president of an environmental homeowners group called the Petenwell and Castle Rock Stewards, or Packers. They've reached out to local farmers to try to stop the phosphorus fertilizer runoff that is feeding the algae. Georgeson organized a meeting at the technical college, and that's where he met the head of the Portage County Farm Bureau, John Aaron.
And he shakes my hand and he says, tell you what, if you bring the lake people up to my farm, I'll bring the farmers to the lake.
We could use some rain, just not all at one time.
32 miles to the north on his 800-acre farm, John Aaron talks with UW Extension Ag agent Ken Schrader about that first meeting with Georgeson.
Rick kind of leaned over and said hi, and I was like, you know, maybe you guys aren't as scary as people thought you were. We really have common goals.
The big common goal is stopping phosphorus fertilizer runoff.
We want to keep nutrients and soil on the land. Obviously, as a farmer, we don't want to see runoff and see the fertilizer that we've spent money to apply leave our property.
Aaron and Schrader think the answer lies in no-till agriculture and cover crops. It means not digging up the soil in the spring and sowing the seeds directly into a root mass formed by a cover crop that's planted in the fall. Schrader says it's soil protection.
The point with cover crops is we want to cover that soil and prevent the water from splashing on that soil and moving it downstream.
We're not digging up the soil in fall, and we're not digging it up in spring.
We climb into John Aaron's truck, and he drives into a field of healthy soybeans planted during an unusually wet spring using no-till and a cover crop. A plowed field nearby was too muddy to plant.
With the crazy weather we've had, I really wasn't delayed much with planting. With the amount of root mass we had, it was able to hold the equipment. We were able to plant into it.
Ag agent Schrader says the techniques will be even more important as the climate continues to warm.
With the climate change and the heavier rains coming that are 1 inch plus, it's a challenge keeping soil in place.
Aaron and Schrader say what's good for local farms is good for Lake Petenwell.
Definitely a win-win. Everything we can do to retain soil nutrients on our property is a win for us, and it's a win for the Petenwell and Castle Rock Stewards.
The way we're going to get things done is everybody working together, coming to the table, talking about it, and supporting each other.
Lakefront homeowner Rick Georgeson agrees.
I'm very hopeful for the future. They win by keeping the soil in their land, and as a result, the water's cleaner.
Instead of being adversaries, farmers and environmentalists here have discovered that they can solve a common problem by being friends and partners. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News.
And if you just joined us, the topic of our discussion today on Route 51 is the topic of that feature story, an ambitious new plan from the DNR to cut the amount of phosphorus on the Wisconsin River watershed, and specifically the amount of blue-green algae in Lake Petenwell and the other flowages and reservoirs. Our guest today, two of the people in the story you just heard, Rick Georgeson and Ken Schrader, and joining us by phone, DNR water resource engineer Kevin Kirsch. Ken, let's start with you. If you could comment on the central theme of this story, that farmers and environmentalists do not have to be enemies.
Right. It's been great, and how things kind of come together, and where we're developing this understanding that there's a common goal. Everybody's working in the same direction, and as was mentioned, it's a win-win situation where the farmers can win by taking a closer look at soil loss and nutrient loss, and then the lakes associations, et cetera, and then the people that are enjoying nature win as a result of keeping that soil in place, and it's not, and the nutrients aren't destroying the river.
Well, as John Aaron said, it doesn't make any sense to a farmer to spend all this money to put fertilizer on a farm field and then have it run off into the watershed.
That's correct. They don't give that fertilizer away. They pay for every pound that's put out there. So to have it go down the river or down the creek, isn't helping them grow that crop. It's not helping their farm be productive and economically sustainable.
Rick Georgeson, the new DNR plan calls for reducing the total maximum daily load limit of phosphorus by 63% for Lake Peatonwell. That's a pretty steep figure. You must be pleased with it.
I'm very pleased, and I'm very hopeful that this is going to sincerely make a difference, not only for the people that live around the lake, but for the people that come and use the lake. My gosh, there's 1,100 campsites around Peatonwell and Castle Rock. People from all over the state and from out of state come and they spend their family vacations there. And so it just only makes sense to save these waters and make them more pleasant for the people that come and visit.
Kevin Kirsch, how did you decide on that 63% reduction figure for Lake Peatonwell?
So the reduction for the reservoirs come from a series of modeling efforts that were done to determine exactly what that threshold would be to prevent the algal blooms that we've been talking about so far. And then through that analysis, we go through and do a very detailed study of all the sources of phosphorus that are coming in to the reservoir and the system, and then assign reductions.
And you're also cutting the total maximum daily load of phosphorus by 49% for the main part of the Castle Rock flowage, with a separate 60% reduction for the Yellow River arm of the flowage. Why did you come up with different amounts for separate parts of the same flowage?
So in the case of that flowage, the way it's shaped and the way it acts, it sort of acts as two different systems. So as we simulated it using the models, it became clear that it did act as two separate systems, and that's why the two different reductions are assigned to it. But as you move up through the landscape, a lot of the things that are going to need to be done on the landscape are all the same. It's still all the same regardless of what those specific reductions might be for individual water bodies.
And then once again, you're cutting the TMDL for the Big Old Plain Reservoir near Mosinee by a really big number, 84%. Why the high figure for that one?
Okay, so one of the things, too, is when I mentioned earlier about that we have the water quality criteria that support those designated uses, different water bodies, just because of how they function, end up needing different targets. And so in the case of the Big Old Plain, the amount of phosphorus that water body can assimilate and not end up with the algal blooms is much lower. So you end up with a higher reduction.
Today on Route 51, we're talking about an ambitious new plan to reduce the amount of phosphorus pollution in the Wisconsin River watershed with Kevin Kirsch of the DNR, Ken Schrader, a UW Extension Ag agent, and Rick Georgeson, the president of the Peatonwell and Castle Rock Stewards, which is also known as Packers. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd like to hear from you at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 webpage. That's wpr.org/Route 51. When we come back, we're going to hear from a leader of the Big Old Plain Reservoir Citizens Organization about the fish kills that have taken place on that reservoir. Here's Don Henley.
Lakes and levees, dams and locks. Put that river in a box. Well, it was running wild. Man must have control. And in the end, we lose our very souls. Goodbye to a river. Goodbye to a river.
Walks just like a waterfowl. If I get them deep river blue, there ain't no one to cry for me, and the fish all go out on a spree when I get them deep river blue.
Doc Watson singing those deep river blues, taking us into our next segment of Route 51 as we talk about an ambitious new plan to control the amount of phosphorus pollution in the Wisconsin River watershed. With DNR water resource engineer Kevin Kirsch, UW Extension Ag agent Ken Schrader, and Rick Georgeson, the president of the Peatonwell and Castle Rock Stewards. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742.
to, or you can put a comment on the website, wpr.org/route51, and I will read it live on the air. Kevin Kirsch, this new plan covers a 9,000-square-mile watershed from the Wisconsin Upper Michigan border south to Lake Wausau. That's a huge swath of the state.
Yeah, and I imagine it can be daunting when you think about the size of the area we're looking at. But through the analysis we've done, we're also able to identify and target specific areas. So we've been able to identify areas that have higher contributions of phosphorus, and that provides the opportunity to start targeting those specific areas to get a bigger impact.
Well, the watershed also includes 21 counties, 85 cities and villages, and about 108 water treatment facilities. How many of these 85 cities and villages are going to be affected by your call to cut phosphorus?
So when we evaluate all the we evaluate all the sources, so potentially all sources are impacted. However, some facilities, for example, some of the wastewater treatment facilities, over the years have already implemented voluntary reductions, and in some cases, facilities already may be below the target goal that they needed to reach, whereas others still need to come down to that target goal.
And do you have any idea how much it's going to cost to implement the plan? How many water treatment systems are going to need to be upgraded?
So we as we're starting this rollout process, the short answer is no, we don't have a full economic analysis completed. And part of it is facilities need to get these numbers and then start doing plans to see what are their options. And as we start moving through that phase, we can start getting a better idea of what the overall cost would be.
Have you gotten any feedback from village and city administrators and mayors concerned about how they might have to pay for this?
So we are just starting the rollout process, but specifically for municipal sources, we have multiple compliance options available. They can do the normal facility upgrade optimization, and I think that optimization or small tweaks will cover a fair number of facilities. We have other options. Water quality trading is one where they can work with non-point sources if they can find and offset their phosphorus load from another source for less money. That's an option. And at the presentations, the rollout meetings that we'll be having, we'll also be presenting on grant opportunities and low-interest loans loans that have principal forgiveness for municipalities to help offset costs.
Well, you brought that up, and it's something that we probably should have brought up in the first segment. You've got these meetings coming up where the public can hear more about this. Tell us about them, and if you want to just throw a few of them out there that might be happening in the next several days or so, that would probably be helpful.
So, So again, if everyone goes to the DNR website and does that search on Wisconsin River TMDL, all of this information will be on there, so they don't need to try to write it down while I go over it. But the meetings are going to start March 5th. The first one is going to be up at Rhinelander from 1 to 4 o'clock at the Quality Inn. March 6th, we'll be meeting down in Stevens Point at the Courthouse Annex Building. And we have two times set up for that meeting, 10 to noon and then 4 to 6. And then on March 14th, we'll be meeting at the Portage Public Library in Portage, again, from 10 to noon and 4 to 6.
Okay.
Go on. Go ahead. Also, on the website, last week we did an informational webinar, so people can go on the website and click on that and get an hour-long presentation that goes into detail on the study.
In case you can't attend some of those meetings in person. Now, you mentioned non-point sources. As I understand it, that means agricultural farm fields, runoff from farm fields?
Correct. So agricultural sources are divided into three main sources, what we call natural background, which would be coming from your forest cover, wetlands, other natural sources. Agricultural sources is another component, and then some of the urban runoff from stormwater.
How are you going to get compliance from farmers for the phosphorus reductions? There are a lot of farmers out there, and I imagine not all of them have the same amount of phosphorus running off of their fields.
So correct. So first of all, the TMDL itself doesn't create any new regulations. It requires or it relies on existing regulations and tools for implementation. And in Wisconsin, we have our non-point performance standards already. So we would be looking at agricultural producers to continue to comply with those standards and come in compliance with those standards. And then as we move through the process, if it's determined that those performance standards will not be enough, there's an opportunity to adopt through rule some more stringent standards.
Ken Schrader, those reduction figures for some parts of the watershed are pretty significant. How much of a problem is this going to be for farmers? Are they going to have trouble achieving these reductions?
Well, it's somewhat difficult to answer, and to be honest, I haven't seen the numbers and done any calculations as far as what it's going to take. But we do have several tools in the toolbox to begin to address the issue, like using cover crops and no-till or minimum till planting, that we can keep that soil on the landscape.
Some of the techniques we talked about in the first segment of the show. And Rick Georgeson, you've had good success with John Aaron in Portage County and his group of farmers. You've reached out to a lot of farmers on this issue. Are you worried that they won't be quite as receptive to the idea of cutting fertilizer runoff if they're being compelled to make those cuts?
Well, some of these farmers are already at it. They're kind of ahead of the cart. There was a farm tour in the Mill Creek Farmer-Led Council. We visited five farms last December, and we're on a school bus, and we're going from farm to farm. And each time we get back on the bus to go to the next farm, I would sit with another farmer. And I'd say, so, you know, can you tell me a little bit about your situation? He says, well, this fall, I planted for the first time 40 acres of cover crop. And I says, can I ask how much did that cost you? And he says, it cost me about $8 an acre. And I said, so you've got that money invested? And I says, can I ask you why you did that? And he says, we're learning. That's the thing to do. It's supposed to help keep my soil on the land. And so here's a young farmer who for the first time did it. He was proud to tell me that he's doing it, and he's hoping to get the results that he's learning. So this is what's going on, and it's pretty exciting.
We're talking to Rick Georgeson, a Lake Peatonwell homeowner, UW Extension Ag Agent Ken Schrader, and Kevin Kirsch of the DNR about an ambitious new plan to limit the sources and the amount of phosphorus runoff going into the 9,000-square-mile Wisconsin River watershed. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Sam in Wausau. You're on Route 51, Sam.
Good morning. My question is, what is the purpose of draining the big old plain?
Draining the big old plain? Could you elaborate on that?
Well, they dropped the water levels probably down by 10 feet, I would imagine, in my area where I'm at. And I don't know if they do that every year. I'm new to fishing the big old plain. I'm just kind of wondering why they do that.
All right, very good. Kevin, I don't know if this is beyond your level of expertise, but why do the water levels of these reservoirs vary so much? Why, in the case of the Big O Plain, are there some times when the water level is so low? And that, of course, affects the water quality. And Sam, thanks so much for the phone call.
Yeah, so, Glenn, this is beyond my area of expertise. So I do know that water levels do vary in a lot of the reservoirs. They have schedules of operation, and I would need to contact someone to get more information on the particulars about why the Big O Plain varies the way it does.
Well, one of the most ambitious targets of the phosphorus reduction plan is the Big O Plain Reservoir, which is near Mosinee, which experienced a catastrophic fish kill in 2009 because of low oxygen levels that winter. The DNR plan calls for cutting the total maximum daily load to the Big O Plain by a whopping 84%, and that was perceived as good news by John Kennedy. He's the vice president of BEBCO, the Big O Plain Citizens Organization.
The TMDL study has been a long time coming, and I'm quite happy with the fact that they have indicated that they're looking for a 30 micrograms per liter target on the phosphorus, which is a huge reduction based on where we are presently.
What problems have phosphorus and the low oxygen level caused in the Big O Plain before? I'm thinking primarily of the fish kills.
the amount of phosphorus coming into the O plane, there's a lot of algal blooms, and when that organic matter decomposes, it consumes a lot of oxygen during the winter. That's been the driving force behind the fish kills of recent years.
What are the fish kills like?
The fish kill of 2009 was the worst ever on the O plane, and it was just horrible. I mean, there were dead fish everywhere up and down the shorelines, lots of carp. But there were a lot of walleye and perch, and some people had some big northern and muskies, a lot of very, very nice fish, you know, just sitting there rotting.
Are you hopeful that with this new plan, things like that won't be happening at least as frequently?
It's going to take a long time. Even if we hit our target, what we have to realize is that there's a lot of, I guess they'd call it inventory, in the reservoir right now. There's a lot of decomposing matter that has to be basically biologically dissolved, I guess you'd say. So even if we hit our target, it's going to take a lot of years. It's going to be a long process.
And are you concerned that maybe the target is so ambitious, so aggressive, that it's something that might not be realized?
Anything we can do to move towards that goal is going to be positive and show a positive impact. When you start to look at the general performance of our croplands in the area, we're seeing a loss of soil, an erosion factor of 3 to 5 tons per acre per year. And that's huge, and we just can't sustain that. And that's just not acceptable to have that much of the soil leaving the fields, and it all ends up in the tributaries and eventually in the reservoir.
That's John Kennedy, the vice president of BEBCO, the Big Old Plain Citizens Organization. Rick Georgeson, your reaction to Mr. Kennedy's description of the fish kill in the Big Old Plain?
It's real. It's been going on for years, this will hopefully have a very positive effect. I would like to come back to the low level. I can't speak to the Big Old Plain, but on Petenwell, annually, in the middle of February, the lake is drawn down 4 feet. And that's also true on Castle Rock, and I'm guessing that might be the case with the question on the Big Old Plain. And the reason that level is the level is dropped down at this time of the year is to prepare for the snow melt, so that we can have it's a flood control issue. And
okay.
as soon as the snow is melted and the levels come back up.
Have you ever seen a fish kill on Lake Petenwell? Like that disastrous fish kill in 2009 in Big Old Plain, where the shoreline was just littered with the carcasses of fish.
That has happened on Petenwell some years back. It's not a regular event. So, yes, I have seen that.
And Ken Schrader, if you could comment on what Mr. Kennedy said about farm field erosion, 3 tons of topsoil lost per acre every year on some farms. Is that accurate?
That it does. It does happen. And, you know, with some of the heavier rainfalls we have, those are the events that we really need to work to mitigate. You know, you get these 2-3-inch rains, even a 1-inch rain on heavier soils, you can have a significant amount of water moving off the field if we don't have the infiltration in place so that water is going down.
And with climate change, with global warming, we're going to see more heavy rain events, not fewer.
That's what I'm hearing, yes.
And how can farmers continue to lose that much soil and stay in business?
Well, I guess eventually it will catch up with them, but there, where we have enough soil depth, you know, it's not that significant when you think about overall soil depth. And so we've got this reserve, but at some point it does come to an end, and you do see some fields where there's been runoff enough, and we're getting down to subsoil, and there's not much coming back from that.
Does this, again, come down to these alternative techniques, no-till agriculture and cover crops?
Correct. I mean, the big tools we have in the toolbox, as you mentioned, the no-till or minimum till, the point there is we're reducing the disturbance of the soil. When we don't fluff it up and make it all loose and it can easily become washed off, that's the one part of the picture. The other part, in order to make it complete, is we keep that soil covered, whether it is from cover crops or the current growing crop so that we don't have that exposure when the rain falls and splashing up and loosening the soil and moving it down. The other advantage to having roots living cover out there is that we improve our water infiltration because they're creating these natural channels for the water to infiltrate.
Very good. Kevin Kirsch, your reaction to what you heard from John Kennedy about the Big Old Plain.
I think that illustrates the issue of the algal growth. When it becomes excessive, you end up with that die-off. And I think that's what we've been talking about today. You get the odor, and then you get, as it breaks down, it pulls oxygen out of the system as it decomposes, and then that can lead to the fish kills as the dissolved oxygen drops.
How are you going to get compliance from the farmers along the reservoir for that proposed 84% reduction in the total maximum daily load of phosphorus?
Yeah, so I think has been mentioned several times today on the show is it is an ambitious target in reduction. Stepping back, you know, we have the overall reduction to meet at the watershed scale. And like I mentioned earlier in our analysis, if you go into the report, we've identified smaller areas. You know, we've divided that 9,000 square miles into 328 smaller sub-basins, as we call them. And we've been able to prioritize those as far as which ones tend to have a higher loading. And then if we go down lower yet, we've developed some tools as we move into the implementation phase that we can identify individual fields that have a potential based on slope, soils, potential cropping practices that we should look at and target for practices that have been mentioned today, such as the cover crops, no-till. I think another thing that we've kind of touched on but not maybe gone into enough detail is that in partnership with UW-Madison, Department of Ag, Trade, Consumer Protection, DNR, we've developed a tool called SNAP Plus, which farmers can use to do their nutrient management planning to look at options as far as what kind of crop rotations, cover crops, buffer strips, all the different agricultural practices. And they can put that in and see what is leaving their fields. And our final goal as we start moving through this initial process of rolling out the draft and then eventually finalizing the report and getting into implementation is to also express these reductions at that field scale, which I think really helps implementation so that farmers know specifically what is their target that they're looking at for individual fields. And then as they go through and do their planning, it really helps them.
Again, Schrader, the challenge of getting compliance along the Big Old Plain Reservoir.
Well, first, part of the challenge is that, of course, not all our farmers are doing no-till, and not everybody's doing cover crops. So there's a cost involved and a learning curve. With no-till, you have to be willing to say, yes, I'm going to do this, and it's going to work. And there's equipment changes and things like that connected with that. And if we talk about cover crops, of course, you're purchasing additional seed, which is normally not in your, the economics and your crop rotation. So there's extra costs involved pretty much with no matter which direction you go with this. And ideally, if we're going to do the best job, we need to look at both situations where we're doing the no-till in combination with the cover crops. And then we also look at, as was mentioned, the SNAP Plus and the nutrient management plans and make sure that we are taking credit for the manure that's being applied and the fertilizers that's being applied and do a good job of managing that as well.
You may need to talk to individual farmers, approach farmers individually and work with them on it.
Oh, definitely. It's all part of the process. And, again, they need to have some time to understand how it works in their backyard. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation here.
Today on Route 51, we're talking about an ambitious new plan to reduce the amount of phosphorus pollution in the Wisconsin River watershed with Kevin Kirsch of the DNR, UW Extension Ag Agent for Portage County, Ken Schrader, and Rick Georgeson, president of the Peat and Well and Castle Rock Stewards, also known as Packers. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. When we come back, we're going to hear from the leader of the Farmers for Tomorrow River watershed about efforts to control the amount of nitrogen fertilizer in those aquifers. But first, here's Johnny Cash.
There was a time the air was clean and you could see forever across the plains. The wind was sweet as honey and no one had ever heard of acid rain. We're torturing the earth and pouring every kind of evil in the sea. We violated nature and our children have to pay the penalty. Don't go near the water, children, see the fish all dead up on the shore. Don't go near the water, cause the water isn't water anymore.
River, river, she come down. River, river, she come down. You travel up the river, you travel up the river.
Peter, Paul, and Mary taking us into our final segment of Route 51 as we talk about a plan to control the amount of phosphorus pollution in the Wisconsin River watershed with DNR Water Resource Engineer Kevin Kirsch, UW Extension Ag Agent Ken Schrader, and Rick Georgeson, the president of the Peat and Well and Castle Rock Stewards. I'm Glenn Moberg. And we have been talking quite a bit about the need for farmers to reduce the amount of phosphorus runoff from their land. In the first segment, we heard from John Aaron. He's the head of the Portage County Farm Bureau, who's working to lessen the impact of runoff on the Mill Creek watershed. But further to the east, Matt Hintz is the leader of a new group known as Farmers for the Tomorrow River Watershed. And his focus is cutting nitrogen and also cutting nitrates because of the pollution of groundwater caused when too much fertilizer is put on that region's sandy soil. Here's Matt Hintz.
The majority of our soil is pretty sandy, so it doesn't hold a lot of nitrogen naturally. Nitrogen is held in the soil with clay and organic matter, and there's not a whole lot of either one of them in our soil type that we're primarily have here.
What are the problems with nitrates or nitrogen?
The big thing with nitrogen is it's hard to predict how much exactly you're going to need. I got a close friend of mine, he always says, Mother Nature bats last. And it's hard for a farmer to really try to figure out how much exact nitrogen you're going to need for, say, a corn crop or wheat crop or potatoes or whatever you're going to grow. And then spoon feeding it on, since our soil can't hold much nitrogen, just to try to reduce the amount of losses that you're going to end up having.
Now, why is that important for you to reduce the amount of nitrogen you're putting on the soil, given the sandy soil in the area in the watershed?
There's two reasons, really. The big one is cost. A farmer just isn't going to go out there and put something on that they're going to lose. So that's a huge one. And also, and equally as important, you can't just put stuff out there and have it end up in the water, groundwater.
Is there a problem with too much nitrogen, too many nitrates in the groundwater in your region?
Yeah, and that's kind of what our focus of our group has been. We're trying to kind of come up with some farmer-led initiatives, I guess, to try to reduce it. You've got some cases where the government wants to try to help everybody out and give you a broad-brush approach, but that might work on my farm, but it might not work for a guy 30 miles away or something like that.
And how are the other farmers that you're working with, how are they reacting to this initiative?
It's growing. You know, I don't think anybody, whether we farm or not, wants to have bad water. And some of these guys have been here for, you know, centuries or whatever if they homesteaded here. So it's important to pass something on to the next generation that was just as good as what they had when they started. So guys are looking at it and kind of thinking the same thing, that we need to do something to help make it better.
That's Matt Hintz, the leader of a new group in Portage County, Farmers for the Tomorrow River Watershed. And Matt told me that there is a meeting, an organizational meeting for that group, March 15th at 10 a.m. At the Jensen Center in Amherst. Ken Schrader, are more groups like this springing up around Wisconsin, farmers interested in reducing pollution themselves?
Oh, yes. It's been steadily growing. And as we just heard from Matt Hintz, this group in eastern Portage County, just getting going And the whole idea is that farmers by nature are problem solvers. That's what they do on a daily basis. And so when we can bring farmers on board and get them to lead the way and encourage their neighbors, we're going to make some nice progress here. The other great thing is that, as Matt alluded to, it's not the same for every farm, and so we need to get these practices on the ground and have examples that then they can go encourage their neighbor and say, hey, this really does work, or this doesn't work, but this is how we can make it work.
Let's go back to the phones. Matthew and Colby, you're on Route 51 with our guests this morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you all doing today?
We're doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. The reason I'm calling was that there's two things. The first one I'll go into is I want to reference the last caller. He was asking about what the big drawdown on the old plane was. And probably the main...
Matt, you're breaking up.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yeah. And make it fast, please. We're down to our last 3 or 4 minutes in the show.
The reason that there's a big drawdown in the Old Plain Reservoir right now by Mosinee is because that they're trying to get ahead of the big sewage dump that occurred in Wausau, and so that they can get that flushed down and through the river system, and so that none of that human waste gets deposited.
Well, first I've heard of that, but it does sound logical. And your other concern, Matt?
Wait, so is this the first you're hearing of this dump?
No, I've heard of the dump, but it's the first I've heard of it being connected to the big Old Plain drawdown.
Well, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so, like, and then the second thing is that I'm really glad that you're bringing on people like Matt Hentz and everybody, and bringing in the farmers' take into this, because there's a lot of things that farmers are doing with cover cropping, corrective and direct manure management and application to make sure that the runoff doesn't happen. But at the same time, you look at municipalities and ones with a lot of power and control like Wausau, and they're allowed to have 3.7 million gallons of raw sewage dumped directly into a river. And so where's the accountability there?
All right, Matt, I think we got it. Thanks so much for the phone call. We really appreciate it. And we do have an online comment from Jeff in Wausau who asks, is there anything citizens can do to help? And this is probably a good way to wrap up the show. Kevin Kirsch, are there anything that citizens can do to help with this process?
So I think, yeah, moving forward, citizens, people who live in the watershed. So one of the great things that the TMDL studies do is they start the dialogue. You know, without this study, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. It brings different people together. It brings the point sources together, agricultural groups, the lake associations, everyone together to start discussing what do we want our surface waters to look like and what are we willing to do to meet that goal. And everyone plays a part in that. So I would encourage citizens to attend meetings. I would encourage them to reach out to watershed groups, work with your farmers. It's really a group effort that it's going to take to meet these water quality goals, and it's a discussion we need to have as collectively.
Ken Schrader?
I would agree wholeheartedly. It's a team effort here. Everybody needs to be on board. And we have to respect each other and work together to this common goal of improving water quality.
And Rick Georgeson, you've got the last word here.
What a legacy to leave behind for our grandchildren and theirs. Clean water. It's just a wonderful project for all of us to be working together. It's great teamwork.
And you must be really happy with the way things have developed with this study after all of your work on it.
There's very, very happy, very pleased.
Thank you all for being with us. We want to thank today's guest, Kevin Kirsch, the water resource engineer for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Ken Schrader, UW Extension Ag agent for Portage County, and Rick Georgeson, president of the Pete and Well and Castle Rock Stewards, also known as Packers. Thanks also to John Kennedy, the Big Old Plains Citizens Organization, Matt Hintz of Farmers for the Tomorrow River Watershed, and John Aaron of the Portage County Farm Bureau for their help with this program. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Dire Straits, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Don Henley, Doc Watson, Johnny Cash, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and the Talking Heads. Next week on Route 51, it's a special Blues in the Schools concert broadcast live from the James F. Beninga Theater on the UW Marathon County campus with the Norman Jackson Band and students and band leaders from across central Wisconsin. If you missed part of this show, you can hear it again Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau, and you can download it at wpr.org/route51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.